The natural sounds of Michigan permeate the new album by the Michigan-based Celtic and world music ensemble Andro. And it's my pleasure to welcome two of the musicians into the studio today. James Spalling plays a number of roles in Andro. He's a composer who also plays guitar, bouzouki, the Celtic harp, and hurdy-gurdy. Carolyn Keeble is an acclaimed world-traveled percussionist. They're here to talk about the new album, The Music of James Spalling. Jim and Carolyn, it's very nice to have you here at WMUK.
Thank you.
Jim, I'm going to start with you. This album is Andro's 6th or 7th. It's way up there. And, of course, it has your name in the title, so it must be a very personal project. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it is quite personal and therefore terrifying. Actually, it's sort of... This is music that I've done that's been extraneous to the Andro stuff. It's it didn't really fit in a folk band setting. I take a lot of pictures of nature, and I have a huge artist morgue, if you will, of nature sounds. I record nature sounds, and I incorporate it in the music. And I put them, most of them, on YouTube. And I guess that's what makes this a little... I'm thrilled to do it, and I'm proud of it, but I also feel quite naked because it's to throw something in the vast sea of YouTube is one thing. It's anonymous, and there's you at least have the illusion of some degree of anonymity, but when you actually work this hard on it and you work with really fine musicians and you put it out there to friends and family and stuff, it takes a whole different bent, I guess.
Well, I think it's too late now to hide. We're going to be featuring a lot of music this hour from this album, The Music of James Spalling. So, Jim, I'm curious about how and where you go to record natural sound in Michigan.
I've always been outdoors a lot, lots of hiking, lots of the beach, lots of backpacking, and I always take, and it's easier now because actually the camera on my phone is better than any camera I have, so I always pretty much have it with me. But I've always taken like a small field recorder, and just in anticipation that there might be something that I could get. And often, you know, I used to work in construction, and occasionally I'd get on a job site and I'd hear geese or sandhill cranes or something outside, and in my lunch hour I'd go out and record them just to get a sample that I might, you know, be able to use someday in music.
Has it become harder and harder over time to find places kind of quiet enough to record?
That's a big problem, because you don't often you think that it's very quiet. Because, you know, I think our modern ear has sort of tuned out, you know, a passing jet or distant traffic. But you sure realize that when you record it and listen back that it's not quite as quiet as you thought it was. So it's very difficult to get a pristine sound.
It sounds like you were just born attuned to the sounds around you and with the ability to come up with melodies. Tell me about your background as an instrumentalist. We see you playing harp and guitar and much more on this new album.
I'm self-taught in everything. I haven't had any musical training. I guess I'll always consider myself primarily a guitarist. That was the first thing that I played in. It sort of branched out into Renaissance lute because the two are so related, and I came to admire a lot of the Elizabethan music, which is transcribed for guitar from the lute music, so I just sort of backtracked it. And one, you can play several. Usually a guitar player can sort of play banjo and sort of play mandolin, and we all, 90% of it is the, you know, getting the fingers to move on the frets and such, and the rest is just different tunings. And
I thought, as an introduction to Andro's new music and this new album, The Music of James Spalling, we'd start with one of the pieces that clearly brings together the natural sound that you've collected and you as a soloist on guitar. It's a piece called The Swallow, and I believe it was inspired by your trips to Isle Royale, a very remote location in Michigan. How many times have you been there?
I've been there 4 times so far. And the first time I went there, I'd never heard the white-throated sparrow because this is not the natural habitat doesn't go this far south. They like the coniferous forest up in the north. And it impressed me because it's one of the few birds that sings like in a Western mode of music, the little three notes that it does. And I think I was 18 the first time I went, and I thought, when I get older and I become a composer, then I'm going to write a symphony based on the song of that bird. So that's, you know how it is when you get older, the symphony kind of boiled down to a guitar solo, but in getting the recordings, my sons both laugh at me to this day because I took them on a trip to Isle Royale and I was determined to get the recording of the bird. Every other time I went there, it was prolific. It was everywhere. It wouldn't stop. And this particular time, every night, it would sing once. And I'd grab my field recorder and I'd run outside the tent and stand in the woods for an hour waiting for it to sing again, and it wouldn't. And actually, I never did get a good recording on that trip. It was the next one that I got these recordings.
Let's hear The Sparrow by James Spaulding, who is playing guitar, and we're listening to the dearly won field recordings from Isle Royale. Thank you. That was The Sparrow from the new album, The Music of James Spalink, from Andro and Friends. Andro is a Michigan-based, mostly Celtic ensemble, but now it's getting harder and harder to fit the group into a category. I have Jim Spalink and Carolyn Keeble in the studio here at WMUK. Jim, let me congratulate you on a beautiful, heartfelt piece and the way it combined the notes of the white-throated sparrow, was it?
Yes.
With guitar. Thanks. Really beautiful. That's just a taste of what this album has to offer. And Carolyn, here's a good time to talk to you about some of the scope of this project, which brought together numerous musicians from all across Michigan to play parts on the record. From what I heard from Jim, you know, he started off in a fairly humble fashion, just writing pieces and including the photography and putting it on YouTube. How did it become a project that included dozens of musicians and a lot of time putting it all together in the studio?
Well, I'm of the opinion that if you're a vibrant, functioning group, you should be recording approximately an album a year to document your artistic process and to have something to kind of carry you forward and to really give you some grounding in your work. And we had just come off of two different creative projects. One was a collection of live recordings. And then from there, we went quite a bit in the opposite direction with an album of reflective, meditative improvisations. And so when you split the difference between those two worlds, somehow we ended up here. And quite a few of the pieces that Jim had reference tracks for struck me as pieces that had a lot of potency and potential, but were rather muzak-y in their existence, you know, because a lot of these were things he's creating at home with a keyboard, a synthesizer, or some kind of means to create a musical referent, but that by no means represented the depth and character and true personality of these tunes without a live string section or an actual brass ensemble or a set of ilium pipes that could create that unique emotion that only they can do.
I'd like to interject that this is by no means the first time you've focused on Jim's music for an Andro CD.
True.
In many other of your recordings, you can find a great tune sets that that you play. So you already have a very high opinion of Jim as a composer and
indeed,
and thought this might, you might reach even higher with this.
Well, and it captures something, you know, deeper in the spirit of why we create music and the fact that Jim put so much of this music in relationship to imagery of his own accord. But then to actually take and develop these songs through deeper orchestrations with the resources of the music community, you know, can't help but cause one to think maybe these could live somewhere else in the world on a bigger screen besides a home computer with a more powerful scene if the music were actually executed as it were created.
Now, if you could pick one piece out that really does include all the resources you just referenced, what piece might that be?
Well, on this particular album, we were just thinking that Big Sable Light is the one that is kind of the all play section. You know, some of the pieces are actually string quartets and or a brass ensemble, but this one is Andro at the epicenter of the piece. You'll hear Michelle and Jim and Fred and myself, but offset on either end is the ilium pipe solo from Tyler Duncan, Ann Arbor-based world Celtic stellar musician. And then we fold in the brass ensemble, which features Tom Evans, Lynn Falk on horn, and Ben Rozier on trumpet, Tom being trombone, and an old connect of mine from some appearances with the Kalamazoo Concert Band. And Lynn and I got to meet just through collegial activities at WMU, and Ben kind of came from the concert band circle as well. And then we needed strings, and so we looked at the people in our circle who we've been connected with, and a player that I've known for many, many years, and Michelle, our fiddler, also knows from her teaching studio, Leanne King McDonald, a WMU alum, on viola and violin on some tracks. Anders Dahlberg, a local double bassist of Canadian lineage, and our cellist, Warren Oja, who is down doing grad work now, I think in Tennessee, but had helped me on a hospice recording project and did absolutely beautiful work. So that's our string ensemble and our brass folks and Tyler and the Andro band. And I think that's basically what you'll hear as the piece develops.
Well, now it's time for Jim to introduce Big Sable Light. Where is Big Sable?
Big Sable, or as some people say, Big Sable. I think both are correct. It's up near Ludington. It's by Hammond Lake. Absolutely beautiful lighthouse. I think it was 1885 when it was built. We played for several. They have a concert series up there. And we played for several of those, and as part of our stipend for playing up there, we all could stay overnight in the lighthouse. It was beautiful. It was absolutely. I spent the whole day getting sound recordings and taking pictures and just sort of hanging out there. It was a perfect day. It's a very majestic place and a very strong sense of history. It's interesting because I was talking about ghost stories and such, because you think of the lighthouse as being a really lonely place. Usually it's only the lonely lighthouse keeper and his family. And I was talking to the keepers there about just that. And they said, no, if you think about it, there are hundreds, maybe thousands of shipwrecks right off from this point. So this is... many people have perished. That's why they saw the need to put a lighthouse there. So they said, this would be the first area of human energy or human activity that those people would come in contact with, if there were such thing as ghosts. But it kind of, it adds to the mystery of it, I think. It adds to the feeling that it's something that's older and more relevant and bigger than you are.
Let's share it with listeners here on WMUK. Big Sable Light from Andro and Friends on the new recording, The Music of James Spalling.
Thank you.
That's the haunting sound of the Irish Uilleann pipes, as played by Michigan artist Tyler Duncan, who appears as a guest artist on this new recording from the Celtic world music ensemble Andro. My guest today, Jim Spalink, composed the tune called Big Sobble Light. My other guest, Carolyn Keeble, rounded up musicians far and wide, many of them classical musicians, to appear on this album, which really culminates in this incredible epic track. It must feel like quite an achievement to finally hear the finished product with all of the musicians included, all the parts together.
Oh man, yeah, we've worked a long time. We've worked hard on this.
Orchestrations, did you write out parts for all of these players?
Yes, I did. When I did just a YouTube thing, I just had to write it on one staff and pretty much have the synthesizer just tell it to do orchestra, and it did that. But with real live breathing human beings, I had to go separate the parts all out and write them all out on a score.
It's pretty fancy for folk music, Kara.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
This album for me lives between folk music and classical music. I'm drawn to the layered nature of it, the instrumentation, and the big ambitious pieces for my classical side. And of course, the beautiful melodies are like really make my Celtic side happy. But it's kind of unusual.
Well, it lives there because that's where I live. I've grown up with vast amounts of classical music as well, and I listened to that and played that before I started playing Celtic music, so.
I imagine some of the musicians that were working on the pieces were thinking or saying even the same thing. This is somewhere in between.
Most of them really had a lot of fun doing it, I think, as well, because we tended to recruit people who you might consider from a resume standpoint as being classical players, but who from a musician perspective love to play all styles and sorts of music. And as a lot of musicians tend to be very interested in moving into new expressive spaces as well. So it was great to hear that they had such a fun time exploring this music too.
But it's also intimidating as a folk musician to tell people that are that accomplished what to do. It's not easy for me. I was pretty intimidated by them, but they were kind to me.
I'd like to remind listeners that this new recording is available through the website CD Baby, and you can find information and links and all of that at the Andro website, which is andromusic.com. Andro is simply A-N-D-R-O. music.com. There's also a CD release concert I can tell you about. It's on October 10th, Saturday at 8 p.m. in Grand Rapids at the Fountain Street Church. And you are planning on projecting some of your images for that concert, right?
Yes. A lot of the ones that I do on the YouTube thing will be projected up there.
And it is conveniently timed with Art Prize. So we would invite and encourage folks to come up for the day. There's all kinds of great, great art and food, and then finish the night with a concert.
So let's move on to another centerpiece on this recording. There are about three tracks that almost reach 10 minutes in length, and they go on a big journey for each piece. This one is called Fool's Errand. I think it sets up a nice contrast in sound and feel to other pieces on the album, and I just want to give folks a sense of the scope of the music of James Spalink. So Fool's Errand, Jim, tell me a little about this.
It was, at the time I was writing this music, I didn't really set out to write with that title in mind, but I happened to be on a particular fool's errand while I was writing this, and that just sort of came to mind that that's probably what I should call it, because that's where I was feeling at the time. What's interesting about the recording of it is we also do this one as a band, but Carolyn was working in the studio in Lansing with Corey DeRusha, who was extremely instrumental in piecing this thing together. I think basically the rest of the tunes, I was there constantly, just like a mother hen over them. And Carolyn and Corey came up with the ideas for this one, and I just said, you know what, you guys, you can have this one. I'll get out of the way. Just show me what you can do. Because I think, in a bigger sense, the music in general, that's why I like other people playing it, and that's why I typically would rather not put restrictions, because I like it to hear it come back the way other people's sensibilities, when they hear it and express themselves with it. I like to leave a lot of leeway in it. Okay. So this one followed suit in the studio, where they took it and ran with it.
Before we start this piece, Carolyn, I do want you to explain
yourself, young lady.
It's an unusual, amazing sound in the very beginning of the piece. Show us the secret.
Reveal all. So, well, a couple things about this piece is that it actually, on the one hand, occurred to us that perhaps it didn't actually fit on this album with this body of work. It's different in a peculiar sort of way, and doesn't necessarily feature some of the string orchestrations and other elements that you hear in some of the other pieces. But what it does do is it really showcases our fiddler, Michelle, her unique personality and creativity, and also gave me a unique opportunity, you know, as Jim was saying, to just sort of make the piece my own and bring my own expression to it, and whatever lived in me and responded to the raw melodic materials. And so it really grew into this kind of creative endeavor where, as he mentioned, our engineer on this piece, Corey DeRuscia from Lansing Troubadour Studios, really was like the fifth Beatle. He was the guy who knew the magic sauce and the knobs and could help me achieve the things I wanted to hear in the mix with the piece. And so there's a couple of unique sounds in here. One of the ones that slightly more straightforward are handbells, church handbells appear in some of the background textures. But the thing that I think you're talking about is actually tuning forks. And it's an octave of tuning forks, and I tried to choose notes that worked and blended with the key structure of the piece. But they do an amazing kind of oscillating response in the presence of a microphone. So this piece really, I got a lot of inspiration for dabbling with how I might be able to use them in the overall development of the piece. Thank you.
I'm in the studio with Jim Smalling and Carolyn Keeble, two members of Andro, and we've just heard a new track from their album, The Music of James Smalling. The name of the track is Fool's Errand. You do have a CD release event planned, and it's in Grand Rapids during Art Prize on October 10th. Music starts at 8 p.m. at the Fountain Street Church. But for those of us who can't get to Grand Rapids on the 10th, what are some other Andro activities we can look forward to?
A slightly more local will be at the Allegan Presbyterian Church, downtown Allegan on Cutler, on Sunday, October 11th at 5. There's a regular benefit concert series there about one Sunday a month, and we've been there in the past. So we'll be there again, kind of keeping in the spirit of the weekend with the new music from this project. And our next local showing will be Kalamazoo New Year's Fest. We'll be down here for that, which is, this is my neighborhood, and Michelle and Jim being more Grand Rapids based.
And where can people get the CD right now if they want it?
We do have it in Schuler's Books of Music up on 28th. The easiest, simplest way is to accost me at a local stoplight or to get onto cdbaby.com, or you can link to it from the Andro website under the discography page, I think.
And that's andromusic.com. Any thoughts for the future? What is, has this sparked yet another massive project? Maybe that symphony is in the future here.
Actually, we have one in the works that Carolyn is always thinking ahead, and as we would rope people into these studios, we're working on sort of backtracking and doing a more more conventional folk band, more Celtic CD, which is, you know, more to what our band really is. So we have several in the can for that already. So we're.
I'm excited about, there's actually a tune with oud on the next album, on kind of breaks out of a slip jig and goes into an old Richard Thompson 10-8 tune. Then in the middle has Igor Huot on an oud improvisation. And so that album will be out hopefully in the spring, but it's just kind of a continued collaborative concept. Like, how could we bring in those kind of key sounds and musicians that don't already exist inside of the band, but to be able to flesh out some dance tunes in a really great imaginative way.
I do want to thank you for coming in and congratulate you on your many accomplishments.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.
Finally, let's talk about Farewell Bounty, the name of a ship, I understand.
Yeah, the Bounty was, it was built for the old movie, The Mutiny on the Bounty. It was a replica of the original Bounty ship. I think it was built in the late 60s. And since that time, it sailed all over the world, promoting, you know, the history and such of those type of sailing vessels. And it actually, even that has a Michigan connection, because I became interested in Bounty in my last trip to Isle Royale. The ferry, it's about a four-hour ferry ride from Copper Harbor to the island across Lake Superior. And the captain of the ferry said, look to your left, I'm going to swing over there. He said, there's the HMS Bounty. And he came up beside her so that we could all get pictures and stuff. And so that's where, when it really kind of came on to my radar. And then several years later in 2012, Hurricane Sandy, is when the Bounty went down. And it was pretty sickening to watch her foundering in the water, tipped over sideways, and now it's just gone. And two of the crew were lost as well. Captain Robin Wallbridge and deckhand Claudine Christian. So this is sort of a lament for the ship and for the crew, and just an acknowledgement of the catastrophe.
Well, we can't hear the whole piece, Farewell Bounty, but we'll come in somewhere in the middle here. And thank you once again, Jim Smalling and Carolyn Keeble from Andro. Congratulations once again.
Thanks.